Before we begin, I just want to dedicate this morning's shiur for a refuah shalema to Chava Basha Bas Esther Shena, who is undergoing treatment, and we hope that our Divrei Torah this morning will be a schus for a refuah shalema for her. Just coming back from two very special and meaningful weeks that we spent together with our family in Camp Simcha, but it's a pleasure to be back with all of you, and having the opportunity to learn together once again is always a very, very special privilege. So welcome back to everybody. I hope you had an enjoyable couple of weeks. A break for me is also not a bad thing. So I'm happy you had a chance to take a little break. And here we are once again. We have a working assumption. We have an understanding that everything in the Torah, every word, and for that matter, every non-word, every space in the Torah is there for a very particular purpose and for a good reason. In the very beginning of Parshas Vayechi, the Torah has something which is a very unusual situation. In the very beginning of the parsha, we find that there is no space between the parsha that precedes it and the beginning of Parshas Vayechi. And the question is, why is that the case? Rashi writes, Lama Parshas Ustuma. Why is it that the beginning of Parshas Vayechi is like a run-on sentence? It doesn't end with a space, as would be the normal thing to do for a regular parsha. And Rashi explains, Lefishakivan Sheniftar Yaakov Avinu. Once Yaakov Avinu passed away, Nistumu Einehem V'Libam Shel Yisrael. There was like an obstruction. There was an impediment in the Jewish people's lives. Mitzaras Hashibud, because of the difficult situation they were in, because of the predicament that they found themselves in. And therefore, this is to highlight the fact that there was like a blockage. So there's no open space before the parasha to show that they lacked open space in their own minds, in their own lives. And that's something that was a very important and critical turning point for the Jewish people. And what I think we learn from this is something very profound and very meaningful. At times, we are very engaged and very occupied. We are very busy and absorbed with the busy lives that we all live. And sometimes we look at our schedules and we say, you know, we have so many things planned and we have so many things that we're focused on and we're fixated on making sure that all of that happens on our professions, on our careers, on whatever occupation we may have. Some people are busy with their schooling, other people with their successes, some people are busy with their hardships, their struggles, their failures. Everybody has things that they're busy with. And because of that, sometimes we suffer the consequence of what Rashi tells us. Nistimu einehem v'libam shel Yisrael. We're so caught up in whatever it is that we're doing. And for legitimate reason, we should be caught up. We have a lot to do. And sometimes because of that, we don't have the ability to be as sensitive or as attentive to that which is going on around us, to that which is happening in the world. And it's important every so often to take a little break and to allow ourselves that little bit of space in our own minds, in our own lives, to begin to just have the appropriate time and space to appreciate what's going on, to understand, to take it in, and to think a little bit. I always feel when I go away to Camp Simcha, although it's a very intense time for myself and my family, being there is not easy at all. It's enjoyable, but it's not easy. Although that's the way I feel, I also feel that getting away and being in a different setting for a little bit of time gives the opportunity just to think differently. There's an interesting pasuk in the very end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. We just read it when he's giving over the mantle of leadership to Yehoshua ben Nun. So we're going to read about that in greater detail in Parashas Nitzavim. And there the Torah says, Atem Nitzavim hayom kulchem lefnei Hashem Elokeichem. Moshe Rabbeinu, at the very end of his life, makes the entire Jewish community stand up. They come to a screeching halt. Atem nitzavim. And Rashi there writes that this is what Moshe Rabbeinu did at the very end of his life. Rashi then says that this became almost a tradition in Jewish leadership, that when Yehoshua ben Nun was passing on, he also brought the entire Jewish people to a standstill. Shmuel HaNavi did the same. And when Shaul HaMelech became the king, Shmuel HaNavi also gathers in all the Jewish people and says, I want you all to stand here as I hand over the mantle of leadership to Shaul HaMelech. And the Mefarshim ask, why is it important that everybody stand at the time when the mantle of leadership is being handed over from one leader to the next? What's the significance of the standing? Perhaps the reason is because there are times in our lives when are so transformative, when are such transitional moments. And it's important, it's critical at moments like that, which are such pivotal and defining moments for the Jewish people, that everybody needs to just come to a standstill for a minute, just to take in what's going on, to understand, to concentrate for just a moment on the gravity of what it is that they are experiencing. And that is what Moshe Rabbeinu taught us. When we're introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu himself, we find that he had this quality. We watch in Parsha Shmos how he was born, how he was raised, until finally we're told that he's ready to go out, venture into the world, and take on the mantle of leadership. And there it says, Vayigdal Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu grows up. Vayetze el Echav. He goes out to his brothers. Vayar b'siv lo sam. Moshe Rabbeinu sees that they are suffering, and he sees what they're living through, and he sees how difficult and painful the situation is. And he watches as an ish mitzri make ish ivri. He sees how an Egyptian goes and strikes his fellow Jew. Was Moshe Rabbeinu the only person that saw that? No, Moshe Rabbeinu was not the only person that saw that. Everybody saw the same thing. They were all experiencing the same. But Moshe Rabbeinu was the only one who was able to look through the entire tumultuous situation. All that was going on, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to see through it all and understand that there's something that I need to do. Because it's hard for people to look past the big struggles and the big challenges that they have and actually see the pain of an individual and understand and appreciate what it is that they're living through and what it is that I can do to help them. The same refrain we find in the story in last week's Parsha. The entire Jewish people watch as a despicable act of immorality takes place. Kozbi Bastzur, Zimri are engaged in an inappropriate relationship, and everybody else sees it. And the Torah says, Vayar Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the grandchild of Aaron HaKohen, sees what happens. And he gets up and he does something about it. What do you mean, Vayar Pinchas? Pinchas was the only one who saw. There were thousands of Jews who were watching and experiencing the same thing he did. But the difference is, Pinchas is the only one who was able to appreciate and understand the gravity of what was happening. Pinchas gave himself a little bit of space to have the clarity of vision, the clarity of mind, to see and understand and interpret what exactly was going on in front of him. Rabbi Fran has an amazing piece that I've shown many, many people who are in Avelis, unfortunately. There's a transitional period in Avelis that's very uncomfortable for people. Now, Avelis in general is, of course, an uncomfortable time, and it's supposed to be that way. But there's one part in particular that really makes people especially uncomfortable, and that is the period of time that's referred to as Aninus. Aninus means, after the relative has passed away, before the burial happens, you're like stuck in no man's land. So the individual is not yet sitting Shiva, people are not yet coming to be Menachem Avel. In fact, the Gemara says, it's inappropriate to be Menachem Avel before the Levaya happens. That is why the practice that we have in many communities is completely wrong. They have a room in the funeral home before the Levaya starts, where the Avel sits down and a lot of people come in. It's not an appropriate thing to do. The Shulchan Aruch says it's not the right thing to do because you can't really give consolation. Again, the closest friends want to go in and support, but for all the guests who are gathered there to come into the room, it's not the appropriate time for it. B'shasha meso muta lafanav, when the body is not even buried yet, when people are still struggling to understand the gravity of the loss, it's not an appropriate time to go in and offer your words of comfort. I'm not able to accept comfort at that time. And that's why the Gemara says it's not right. So we have this very strange time that we refer to as Aninus. And in the time of Aninus, the Shulchan Aruch writes that we do not perform mitzvos. Not only do we not perform mitzvos, we're not allowed to perform mitzvos. So we're not allowed to say any brachos. Obviously, we're allowed to eat and drink. A person has to take care of themselves. But they're not supposed to say any brachos. They're not supposed to be engaged in any other mitzvah. Their singular focus is supposed to be on making sure that the greatest kavod ames possible is the result of that time of aninus. And we don't want them to be distracted with anything else. And yes, saying a bracha is supposed to distract us. Right? What we learn from aninus is that during the rest of the year when we say a bracha, we're supposed to be paying attention. And because we're supposed to pay attention, if I'm going to take my mind off during the period of aninus, I'm not going to be focused on the preparations for the funeral. So Rabbi Fran writes how a personal story about himself. I think he writes that his parents were living in Seattle, if I'm not mistaken, and he was traveling out to attend the funeral of his mother or his father. I haven't seen it in a few years. And he writes about how it was so uncomfortable for him because here he is on the plane and he has a few hours, a trip from Baltimore to Seattle. And he said he was thirsty and he's taking a drink and he kept catching himself that halfway through the bracha, he realized, oh, I'm not supposed to say a bracha, I'm in aninus. And then he went to the bathroom, and when he came out, he started saying an asher yetzer, and he realized, oh, I'm not supposed to be doing this. And he said it was an opportunity for him to ask himself and to think about, what is the purpose of aninas? Why do we have this? It's such a strange time for us. We're so accustomed to making brachos and to doing mitzvos, and it's so strange that the Torah obligates us not to do any of that. What is the reason? And he said it was finally came to his understanding that the reason why is because we need a chance to resensitize ourselves every so often. We never stop and have an opportunity to just think about life, to think about what a bracha actually means to us, to think about what an Asher Yatzar, the other 364 days of the year, would mean. Now we have the opportunity, he says, during that period of Aninos, it's an opportunity for a person to just stop everything else and use that as a moment of reflection. What is our tefillah all about on a regular day? And the tefillah that I'm not saying today, what am I missing? What is a bracha supposed to feel like when I normally make it? I never have the chance to resensitize myself, to think about it once again. But that is the opportunity that is given at a time like that. And I really believe that the 3 weeks and the 9 days are exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts into our schedules every year to give us that very same opportunity, that very same experience. If we didn't have the 3 weeks and the 9 days, our lives would just keep going on being busy and doing all the same things. But during this period of year, we have an opportunity to slow it down a little bit. There are no simchas. We're not running. We're not going. We're not doing as much as we otherwise would. We're not swimming during the 9 days. We're not doing the general activities that we otherwise would. And it's an opportunity to use it as a moment of reflection, to think about the busy lives that we live. Rashi says, Mishum koshi hashibud. Sometimes we have so much going on in our lives that we don't have the ability to really see and sensitize ourselves to that which is going on even in our own community and to see what's happening. Now, obviously, the 3 weeks and the 9 days are really supposed to be a commemoration of Churban Beis HaMikdash, and I just wasn't sure if I would have a chance to speak about this closer to Tisha B'Av, so that's why I wanted to take the opportunity this morning to do that. The Navi Yeshaya, when he talks about Geula, when he talks about our path toward redemption, he says, Ki lo machshavosai machshavoseichem, velo darcheichem derachai. If I were to chart out the course of our Geula, I obviously would have had a very different plan than HaKadosh Baruch Hu has. I would not have set it out to be the way that it is. I don't understand why part of a Geula needs to be that 45 people in Meiron need to lose their lives. I don't understand why part of a Geula needs to be that Jews who are going and celebrating Shavuos have to have benches collapse on them and lose their lives. I don't understand why a building in Surfside has to collapse on people, and all of that is a part of the steps toward our redemption. I don't understand it at all, and I don't think any of us can understand it. But that's exactly what the Navi Yeshaya warns us. Ki lo machshavosai machshavoseichem, velo darcheichem derachai. The ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are so different, are so distant from the way that we human beings think, and we have no way to fully understand it. Rav Shimshon Pinkus writes in one of his beautiful Svarim, imagine, it's not that we live in a different reality than HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. We're looking at the same world that he's looking at. But he explains so beautifully that, imagine you have a young child who's 2 or 3 years old, and they're looking out the window of a fourth floor of an apartment, and they're looking out with a parent, with an adult. And they're both looking at the same street, and they see the same things. But one of them understands how to interpret what they see, and the other one just sees colors. So the child who doesn't understand everything that they're seeing sees something yellow and sees something green passing by, but they don't understand what that represents, what it really means. When the adult looks at the very same street and they see something yellow, they understand that's a school bus and there are children getting on the bus going to school. When they see something green passing by, they understand that's a garbage truck and there are garbage men coming to do their job to take the garbage to keep the streets clean. When they see a white truck passing by, they understand that it's the mailman coming to deliver the mail and it's a package coming from somewhere further away. That explains, Reb Shimshon Pinkus, is what we mean. Ki lo machshavosai machshavoseichem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at the same world as we look at. The Ribono Shel Olam sees the same thing we see, but he interprets it very differently. We don't have the ability to interpret the way he does. When we look at the world, we see a green truck, a yellow truck, a white truck, but we don't really understand what that means. We see different experiences going on all around us, but we don't know how to really internalize and understand what that's supposed to mean. I can't tell you how many phone calls I've gotten since the terrible tragedy in Miami, and people are asking, what does it mean? I don't know. I'm not a Navi. How am I supposed to know what it means? Nobody knows what it means. And if anybody tells you what it means, don't believe them. Because nobody knows. We don't have Nevi'im in our generation today. It's impossible to know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of all of us. What we do know is, if I can ask all those who are on Zoom with us, if they can please mute themselves, we don't really know exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways are supposed to mean to all of us. It's very, very difficult, it's very complicated for us to fully understand and appreciate the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that's what the Navi means. The ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are not the ways of human beings. The way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinks and manages his world is not the way that we do. And this applies to so many different aspects of life, but certainly toward the path of our redemption. In fact, in Sefer Shmos, Moshe Rabbeinu is instructed to go talk to Paro and to negotiate with him and tell him about all the impending makos that are about to befall his people. And Moshe Rabbeinu realizes what happens, and he starts talking to Paro, and then he turns back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, I don't understand, we're going backwards. Me'az basi al Paro, from the time that I came to negotiate with Paro, heira la'amazeh. Nothing has become better, it's only become worse. So what are you doing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You're telling me that I'm the one who's going to save the Jewish people, I'm going to lead them to redemption, but now, ever since I came onto the scene, nothing has been more positive, only negativity. So how could it be? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, no, I have a plan. There's a way in which I'm going to do this, but I think that's really a blueprint for all of Geula. Sometimes we look at it and we see almost as if we're going backwards. What's happening? It seems like the world is imploding on us in a very literal sense. A person could be sleeping in the middle of the night on a building, on a top floor. Who would ever imagine, who would ever think that it would implode on them? It's an unimaginable thought for us to have, and yet, somehow, this is all part of our story. And it's hard for us to understand. But in Parshas Va'era, when it's described, the Torah says, "V'hotseisi v'itzalti v'ga'alti v'lakachti." We're all familiar with those phrases. But what the Torah Tumima explains is that Geula is a process. "V'hotseisi v'itzalti v'ga'alti v'lakachti" means when we came out of Egypt, when he came out of Mitzrayim, it was not from one moment to the next. It was a process. It went in stages. It does not happen immediately. And that's all part of the experience that all of us go through. Shlomo HaMelech is the one who was charged with building the Beis HaMikdash. David HaMelech wanted his whole life to build a Beis HaMikdash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to David HaMelech twice. In Navi we find the same response. Dam l'rov shafachta. David HaMelech, I appreciate your concern. I appreciate the fact that you want to build a Beis HaMikdash for me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. But unfortunately, your hands are filled with blood because you fought many wars. And those cannot be the hands that build God's ultimate home, ultimate resting place. So David HaMelech's request is denied, but he gives instructions to his son Shlomo that this is what he should be busy with. I want that you should build the Beis HaMikdash. And Shlomo HaMelech, both in Sefer Melachim, as well as in Divrei HaYamim, makes the same comment. Ha'umnam yeshev Elokim al ha'aretz. You know, we're spending time now thinking about a Beis HaMikdash. Let's go back to the origins of a Beis HaMikdash and understand what it's all about. Shlomo HaMelech asks, Ha'umnam yeshev Elokim al ha'aretz? Is it conceivable in any way? Is it plausible to anyone that the Ribono Shel Olam is going to live and inhabit a building in our world? We human beings live in a bedroom, we live in a dining room, we live in a home, we live in an apartment. You're going to tell me HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be confined to a building, to a structure? Shlomo HaMelech repeats his question and he says, Ha'umnam yeshev Elokim es ha'adam al ha'aretz? Do you think God is going to join human beings in their experience living on this land? Hine ha'shamayim u'shmei ha'shamayim lo yechal kalucha. The heavens and the galaxies are not even able to contain or to accommodate the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what do we think? We're going to build a building? What are we davening for? We want a Beis HaMikdash? What's going to happen in a Beis HaMikdash? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to have space? He's going to live there? Are we going to see him? What does it mean? And this is something that troubled Shlomo HaMelech very much as he's venturing into this new experience of his life of building a Beis HaMikdash. The Ramban writes in a Sefer on Chumash, Lo yachilu v'yachziku godol rama musecha. Shlomo HaMelech's question is, Your majesty, your grandeur is so great. Ein lecha ketzev umida. It's so immense, it's so enormous that there's no way that we can confine it to a space. And in fact, The Medrash tells us an amazing comment. Moshe Rabbeinu was also instructed to build some kind of edifice for our Kodesh Baruch Hu to live in. And that was, as we know, in the pages of Chumash, when he's given the detailed instructions of how to build a Mishkan. The Medrash has an amazing comment there, where the Medrash says, there were a few things in Moshe Rabbeinu's life, Sheshama Mipi HaGura, a few instructions he was given in his life that he heard directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'nival V'nirtela Achorav. He was like so shocked and appalled by what he heard that he had to jump back in total and absolute amazement. How could it be HaKadosh Baruch Hu is asking this of me? Now what were those things? One of them, which is relevant to us, is B'shasha Amarlo, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, V'asuli Migdash V'shachanti B'socham, I want you to make a Beis HaMigdash, and I will come and I will rest my glory, my Shechina, there in the Beis HaMigdash. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ribono Shel Olam, you're telling me to make a Migdash and you're going to come? How is that possible? How are you going to fit in there? What am I going to build that's ever going to be able to contain you? You're too great, you're too big. So this is the question that troubled Shlomo HaMelech. It troubled Moshe Rabbeinu, and it troubles many, many that have come after them. What is the Beis HaMikdash all about? And the Medrash writes, Mashal l'maha dover dome, how are we to understand this? L'ma'ara psucha al sfas hayam. You know, many of us go in the summers to the oceans and we see the beautiful waves. So the Medrash gives us that imagery about a ma'ara psucha al sfas hayam, a small cave that's right on the shores, on the banks of the river. Ga'ash hayam v'nismala ha-ma'ara. A big wave comes in and immediately what happens? The orifice there, the opening, gets filled with water. V'hayam lo chaser. Does the ocean look like it's lacking any water? The ocean looks just as full as it looked a minute ago. Nothing is lacking at all. And that is the way the Medrash explains this dynamic of what it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes into a Beis HaMikdash, comes into a Mishkan. It says, "Chvod Hashem malei es HaMishkan." HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence fills the space of the Mishkan, but yet there's nothing lacking of the Ribono Shel Olam's presence. It's like the big sea that fills up the entire ocean. All the water is still there, but yet a little bit of it goes into the cave, and it fills up the cave, it overwhelms the cave. And the Medrash writes, that's the way we understand what happens when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and rests his Shechina in the Beis HaMikdash or in a Mishkan. The Ramchal and many others describe this is referred to as tzimtzum. What does tzimtzum mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu almost restricts himself. He confines himself to a space, even though it's so beyond our understanding. But that's really what a Beis HaMikdash is all about. Now, the Baal HaTanya writes, don't think that tzimtzum means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu confines himself only to the space of the Beis HaMikdash and then he's not found anywhere else in the world. Don't think that gives us license to then lead lives doing whatever we want because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not watching over us. Of course, the Ribono Shel Olam is always watching over us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always looking at everything that we do. And yet, even though he is Malach al Ha'aretz Kevodo, there is an intense and powerful feeling of Shechina in the Beis HaMikdash. And that is what we're missing. That is what we're lacking. The Medrash tells us, when the Mishkan was built, HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs Moshe Rabbeinu, Va'asu li migdash v'shachanti b'socham. Writes the Medrash, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want us to build a building for him? What's the reason? What's the purpose? So the Medrash gives three statements. All three of them sound like they're the same. But the Netziv writes that each one of them is teaching us a very different perspective of what our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all about. Number one, the Medrash says, imagine in your mind for a moment that you have sheep that are grazing outside. Now, if the sheep don't have a shepherd, they're not going to have the ability to have a meaningful day, to have a successful day. So the Medrash says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at us and says, Atem Tzoni, you are my sheep. Va'ani haroe, I am the shepherd. Now, it would make sense if the shepherd's going to spend the whole day outside in the sun, out in the desert somewhere, wherever the fields are that the sheep are going to graze. So it would make sense that you make some kind of hut for the shepherd to be comfortable. Otherwise, he won't be able to do his job. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if I'm the shepherd and you are the sheep, it would make sense that you build a place for me that I can look after you. The Medrash then continues. Atem HaKerem, you are the vineyards. You are the grapes. You are the plants. You are the produce. V'ani HaShomer, and I am the watchman. If you don't have somebody watching over the field, people are going to come, ransack the field, take away all the produce, you're going to have nothing left. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you are the produce, you are the vineyards. And I am the Shomer HaKerem, I am the one who is tasked with looking after the vineyard. Now it would make sense, if you have somebody who's standing outside of a field, outside of a property for an entire day, we have to provide shelter for them. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you have to build me a home where I can be the Shomer HaKerem. Number three, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Atem Banim Ve'ani Avichem. You are my children, and I am your father. As the Pasuk says, Banim Atem LaHashem Elokeichem. We are all considered the children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now it would make sense for a child to invite the parent into their home. Even if a child moves away to a different community, it would be the appropriate thing that they make a space for their parent to come visit, that they would make the parent feel comfortable. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're living here on the world, you moved far away from me up in heaven, it would make sense that you make a comfortable place for me to come visit you and to stay, that I can be in close proximity to your community. That is the way the Medrash explains why we need to have a Beis HaMikdash. Now, all three of these parables sound very similar. So what is the message? What is the point? And why is it that there's a three-pronged mashal that is given here in the Medrash? And the Achronim explain that perhaps the reason why is because this really highlights the significance of a three-pronged relationship that we're supposed to have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Number one, the Ribono Shel Olam is our Roe Tzon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our shepherd. He's our caretaker. He's our guide. He's our leader. And we turn to the Ribono Shel Olam for advice and direction, for all the instruction in our life that we need. We have complete dependence and reliance on HaKadosh Baruch Hu like the sheep, who really have full confidence and faith in their shepherd. They don't know how to do anything on their own. They're completely lost without the shepherd. And this is the way that we are expected to lead our lives, that we have complete faith and dependence and reliance on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have absolute trust because we have no understanding of how our world really runs. And we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for direction and for instruction throughout life. Number two, the Medrash says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Shomer HaKerem. I don't think we can feel safe anywhere in the world for a million and one reasons. I just read in the news this morning that over the July 4th weekend, there were over 400 people in the United States who were fatally shot. What do you make of that? 400 people in one day. Why? Because people were partying in a bar somewhere and someone came in and shot them. It's crazy. You're not safe anywhere. You can't even live in a building and assume that you're safe anymore. You can't go to a play at night and assume that it's going to be a safe environment. You can't go to a ball game. You can't do anything. Who knows? Forgetting about anti-Semitism. Just living life as human beings. Nobody knows what's safe anymore. And we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we say, you are the Shomer HaKerem. You are our protector. You're our shield. You are the Shomer Yisrael. You are our security. And that is the only way that we can make it through this experience, as we see so many horrible human beings go around and just ravage and destroy this beautiful world that you have created. But we all know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the end is the Shomer HaKerem, and that's a second element, the second aspect of our relationship with Him. And number three, we are to look to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as our loving, dedicated, and generous, devoted Father. This is the ultimate reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to build a Beis HaMikdash for Him, because He wants us to be reminded that we should feel like children to Him. He wants us to feel like we are the ones who are the beneficiaries of His love. Now, sometimes it's hard for us to feel that, but it's important for us to be reminded every so often that this is really what a Beis HaMikdash highlights, the significance of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what it means to us, what it means to the Ribono Shel Olam, and how it is that we're supposed to internalize that message. This is what is lacking without a Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara writes in Maseches Pesachim that there were seven things that were created before the Briyas HaOlam actually started. Before HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the sun, the moon, and the stars, and everything else, the galaxies, and the whole world as we know it, the Gemara tells us that there were a few things that were already planned and envisioned before all of that came into existence. And one of them was a Beis HaMikdash, which is fascinating. It shows you the significance of what a Beis HaMikdash means to our world, the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt that was more important than everything else that was soon to come in the creation of the world. Now, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, We have difficulty understanding exactly what that means because we don't really know what life with a Beis HaMikdash meant either. But the Medrash tells us a striking comment. The Medrash says, Mizmar La'asaf. Mizmar means what? Mizmar means a song. So we say in our davening every day, Mizmar L'soda. Right? We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we sing to Him, it's beautiful. Now normally, we associate a Mizmar with something that's positive. Now here, the Medrash says something that sounds backwards. Mizmar La'asaf, why are we singing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Elokim bo goyim benachal asecha. Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for bringing the enemy into your Beis HaMikdash and allowing them to destroy it. It's wonderful. How do you understand that? And the Medrash asks this question. Mizmar la'asaf? You introduce that statement by thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by praising Him? Kina la'asaf mi bayalei. We should say kinos, we should be crying over the fact that a Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So how do we introduce this paragraph by saying, Mizmar la'asaf elokim bo goyim benachal asecha, we're so happy, we're celebrating the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed the enemies to come and destroy the Beis HaMikdash. How is that appropriate? Seems like the wrong introduction. The Medrash says, Mashal lemaha davar domeh. How are we to understand this? Lemelech she'asa beis chupa lebeno. You have a melech, you have a king, who wants to make a wedding for his child. And we've all seen when the Queen of England wants to make a wedding for her child or grandchild, you see it's weeks and weeks and months of preparation, and you see what goes into it, into a royal wedding. Visida, vikira, vitsira, and he has the greatest artisans coming to try to put together the most beautiful place, the most beautiful location, to have this beautiful gala, to have this wedding. And they're painting murals on the walls, and they have beautiful curtains, and everything you can imagine that I don't even know how to describe. And then, as they're preparing for the wedding, the melech sees that his child, yatza letar basra, the kid is growing his hair long. He becomes a homeless. He's on drugs. He's roaming the streets with all the bums on the street. It's not going to work. How am I going to make a wedding, a royal wedding, for somebody who looks like this? And he tries to talk to his child, and he tries to get him back, and he tries to discuss with him, you know, do you understand? You're a prince. Do you understand? Look what we're preparing for you. And he realizes that it's just not going to work. Miyad ala hamelech lechupa. The king goes to everything that has been prepared for his child's big day. V'karas havilos, and he goes and he rips all of the beautiful artistry that has been done. V'shibra asakanim, he breaks down all the walls. V'natal pedagog shalo, ivav shalkanim, and the homeless prince, who's on drugs and has his long hair and is roaming around the streets and the bars at night. He has one friend who's been there for him all along, one responsible adult. And as all of this is going on, as this beautiful place is being destroyed, this friend of the prince goes and takes one of the sticks and makes a flute out of it, and he starts playing music, and he starts singing. Amrulo, the king turns to him and he says, Hamelech hafa chupaso shel beno. Do you see what's happening? Look at the devastation, look at the destruction that just happened. Va'ata yoshev u'mezamer, and you're playing the flute, you're singing songs, you think that's an appropriate response? Look what's going on here. We invested all this money. We built this beautiful edifice in order to have a wedding celebration. It just was torn down and ripped apart, and you're singing and you're celebrating. It's just, what's wrong with you? Amar Lahem, he says, Mezamer ani, I'm happy that he destroyed the building. I'm happy that he didn't kill his child. The king had every right to be angry at his son and to kill him, but he didn't. He decided to take out his anger on the building instead of taking the life of his own child. And that's why I'm singing. Writes the Medrash, this is why we sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Shafa chamaso ala etzim ala havanim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided, instead of destroying the Jewish people, which he had every right to do, we failed him. We failed him miserably. Instead of doing that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose, you know what, I'm just going to take it out on the building. On the beautiful building. All the gold and silver, the most beautiful edifice you can ever imagine. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed that instead of destroying us. and therefore we sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now this is a very hard matter to understand, because when we're talking about human beings, yes, the king has a temper tantrum, and he has the ability either to kill his son or to take it out on something else. So he decides to destroy the building instead of killing his son. Instead of having an outburst and an outrage at his own child. But do we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't control his temper? Is that what this is about? The Ribono Shel Olam needs a punching bag. So he has to decide, what's it going to be? He looks around the world and he says, hey, I have two options. Either I'm going to destroy the Jewish people or I'm just going to destroy the building. You think HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that petty? It's outrageous to say such a thing. What does the Medrash mean? Shafach HaMasar Le'etzem Avana. Wow, we got spared there. We're lucky. Kadosh Baruch Hu would have killed us, but he found the punching bag along the way. Instead of killing us, he decided to destroy the building. That can't be what it means. So how do we understand this Medrash? Rav Shimshon Pinkus has really such a profound insight into this Medrash that I never understood until I saw this. I always took the Medrash at face value, and I had this question. How do we compare HaKadosh Baruch Hu's feelings and emotions to that of a human being, of a king, who's disappointed with his son? He explains as follows. Mashal Atzayir Uman Mumche is a highly skilled artist, a painter. Asher Kiminag HaTzayarim, he's spending his whole life painting, selling paintings. He's involved in the industry. But at the end of his life, he realizes he has to leave over something that is going to be his legacy, something they're going to put somewhere to celebrate his life. And he understands that this has to be his main focus for the remaining years of his life. And Yashkia Kol Kishronosav, he understands that he needs to devote and invest all of his attention without any distraction, without any interruption at all, without any disturbance. He has to be totally focused on this painting, because this is going to be his legacy. And he's trying to figure out how he's going to do that. You know, we all live lives where there's noise around us. And he decides the only way to get clarity of mind is to go to the top of a mountain where nobody else is going to be there, where he'll have no distractions at all. And he's just going to be able to focus on this painting. So that's what he does. Goes up to the top of a mountain. He brings an apprentice with him, who's going to help him anytime he needs a different color, a different stroke, a different brush, anytime he needs anything. This one helper is going to be there with him. And the plan is they're going to stay up there for months and months until it's completed. And he starts painting and he's loving how it's coming out. And he starts studying and analyzing it and examining it very carefully, all on top of the mountain. And he becomes so consumed with this project. But then he realizes, I need to take a step back. I need to see what it looks like from a distance. Sometimes when you're too close, you can't really focus on the bigger picture. So he starts stepping back a little bit, stepping back a little more, and he's totally entranced by his creation. And he keeps moving back until he's about to fall off the cliff. He doesn't see what's going on behind him. And his apprentice is screaming at him. He's yelling, "Do you see where you are? Be careful. You're about to fall off the mountain. You're going to fall off the cliff." But he's totally entranced. He's totally focused. And he can't hear anything. The apprentice realizes this man is going to lose his life. So having no other option, he takes a big rock. He throws it at the painting. The entire painting gets ripped in half. And the man is startled. The artist wakes up and he realizes. He turns around and he sees his apprentice standing there. He says, "What did you just do? Don't you understand? We've been here for 6 months. We've been working on this. Finally, I put the finishing touches and you just destroyed it? What's wrong with you?" And he turns to them and he says, "Turn around. Look where you are." And he turns around and he realizes one more step, he was about to fall off the cliff. And it wasn't until this apprentice wakes him up from his trance that he's able to appreciate the gravity of the situation that he was in. That, writes Rav Shimshon Pinkus, is what it means. And I think this is an absolutely profound insight. The Gemara tells us, at the time of Churban Beis Hamikdash, people were involved in the lowest of crimes possible. Avodah Zarah, Gili Arayos, Shvichas Damim. People were murdering each other. Gili Arayas, rampant in the streets, Avodah Zarah, Bayisheni was Sinas Chinam. We have the same thing going on today. Look at our world, look what's happening. Sinas Chinam, how much different is it today than it was then? And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tried so many times to send all the different Nevi'im to make us realize, look, you're falling off a cliff. You're involved in the lowest of the low. Avodah Zarah, Gili Arayas, Shvichas Damim, Sinas Chinam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu every year gave us the opportunity to get a kapara on Yom HaKippurim. Can you imagine how that felt? Imagine what that was like. We do all kinds of averis during the year. We show up to the Beis HaMikdash on Yom HaKippurim. You watch the Kohen Gadol do the Avodah. And we have the Sar HaMishtaleach. Sar HaMishtaleach was when they would take the goat and walk it to the top of the cliff and throw it over the cliff, and everybody in the Jewish community would watch how the red string turned white. Miraculous. A miraculous event every year that assured us that we were atoned for all the horrible sins that we had done, that we had performed that year. The Rambam writes, Sar HaMishtaleach, that animal that highlights this tshuva process, Mechaper al kol ha'aveira shabbatara ha'kalas v'ha'chamuros. That is able to give a kapara for everything we may have done during the year. Bein bezadon, bein beshogeg, whether I did it mindfully, or whether I mistakenly did something wrong. Bein shahodalo, whether I felt bad about it, or I didn't feel bad. Hakol mistaper, besara mishtalea, haikam on Yom Kippur, magic. HaKadosh Baruch Hu got rid of everything I did wrong. That's amazing. But you know what happens when you live life like that? What happens when a parent, every time a child does something wrong, every time a child gets in trouble in school, the parent, when the child comes home, says, it's not your fault, it's the teacher's fault, it's your friend's fault, it's the principal is terrible, the school is horrible, it's everybody else's fault. What's going to happen to that child when they grow older? They'll never, ever take responsibility for anything. You're not doing your child a favor by saying that. Again, there are ways to deal with children, but that's not the way. It will not be helpful to the child in the long term. You're hurting the child by constantly giving them that crutch, by always covering for them. You have to let the child make a mistake and own up the responsibility of making a mistake. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu here gave us a Beis HaMikdash. And it was the easy out. He covered for all our mistakes. The Gemara says as well in Maseches Yuma, why is it that we have the reference of Livanon? Why is Eretz Yisrael called Livanon? Why is the Beis HaMikdash called Livanon? And the Gemara says, Shemalbin Avonoseim Shal Yisrael. Because anything I do wrong, I go to the Beis HaMikdash, I bring a karban, and I'm good. So last night I went into a nightclub, and I had a horrible evening that I should never have had. And I show up the next morning in the Beis HaMikdash, I bring a karban, Malbin Avonoseim, everything's fine, nothing wrong. I was Mechal Shabbos last week, everything's fine. What's wrong? I take no responsibility for anything I do because I just get away with it the next day. And life moves on like nothing ever happened. He writes an amazing way to just take it down into simple man's terms. He says, Nitzayir la'atzmeinu, let's imagine for ourselves. A man forgets that it's Shabbos. A woman forgets that it's Shabbos. I'm keeping Shabbos, I turn the lights on. By mistake, it's a reflex. I walk into a room, I turn the lights on. Okay, not a good thing to do, but I didn't do it on purpose. What's supposed to happen? What's supposed to happen? I need to do tshuva for that. I made a mistake. Now he says, imagine for a second you have a stockbroker. He didn't just turn the lights on Shabbos. He makes some deals on Shabbos. He totally forgot that it's Shabbos. He sees that the market is open, things are doing really well, and he makes $100,000 in the stock market on a Shabbos. His wife walks into the room and says, what are you doing on the computer? It's Shabbos today. He says, oh my goodness, I can't believe it. I forgot all about it. I was so excited. I heard yesterday there was a big day coming on the market. I couldn't miss it. I forgot all about it. This morning I woke up. I ran to take care of whatever I had to do. I just made $100,000. Okay. That money didn't stop at $100,000. It was invested and reinvested and reinvested. In the last hour, he just made $500,000. Now again, this doesn't happen in real life, but imagine such a thing. And he feels terrible. I mean, he feels very excited about the fact that he just made $500,000, but he feels terrible. I just was Mechal HaShabbos. How did I do that? So what does he do? back in the day. The markets used to be open on Shabbos, and you also used to make $500,000 in one day. So, okay, it's a Tuesday afternoon, but it's Yantif, okay? So he's Machala Yantif. So, what does he do now? He totally was oblivious. He didn't realize he does business on Shabbos Yantif, Tuesday afternoon Yantif. He does the business, makes $500,000. His wife walks into the room and says, "What are you doing?" He says, "What do you mean, what am I doing? I just made $500,000. She says, "Yeah, but it's Yantif. You're not allowed to do work on Yantif." And he feels terrible. So what does he do? Charity. Simple, not charity. Much easier. I'll go to the Beis HaMikdash tomorrow morning, and I'll offer a carbon. How much does an animal cost? I don't know. What do you say? Let's say I want to buy the nicest, fattest, juiciest animal possible for the carbon. Let's say. How much is that going to be? Anybody know? $500, $5,000. Let's say. You say $500. I'm going to inflate that. $5,000. Okay. So not bad. I made $500,000. I lost $5,000 on the carbon. I go to the Beis HaMikdash for the next week. I travel up to Yerushalayim, offer it to the Kohen. I say, you know, I feel really terrible. I make a little confession in the Beis HaMikdash. You know, last week, by mistake, I forgot it was Yantif. I feel really bad about it. Here's my carbon, God. I hope you'll understand. And they do the Avodah. He does everything he's supposed to do. What's the deterrent for him next time around? That was a good deal. Pretty good deal. Next Shabbos, you think he's going to keep Shabbos? Why would he? All I have to do is pay $5,000 dividends from the $500,000 that I made. It's worth it. And I'll get away with it. Same thing with everything else that went on in life then. I can do whatever I want. I can live a life of immorality, of murder, of sinas chinam, of destroying other people's lives. And I'll be fine. And we'll all be fine. HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized this is destroying the Jewish people. This is destroying the Jewish people. Having a Beis HaMikdash was actually the root cause of their destruction. They were relying too heavily on a Beis HaMikdash. They forgot what it means to live life with a sense of ethics and morality because they said the Beis HaMikdash will always be the catch-all. And the Ribono Shel Olam said, if you don't realize, if you lose perspective, I have to take it away because you're using it as a crutch for too long. Talk to a physical therapist. I watch in camp every day how the physical therapist there gets kids to be uncomfortable when they come off of a wheelchair, off of their crutches. And I say to myself, the kid is crying. What are you making them do this for? You know why you're making them do it? Because without it, they'll never walk in their lives. You need to make somebody do that sometimes. You have to make them uncomfortable in order to get them to have a comfortable life going forward. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted all of us to live lives based on a set of principles of ethics and morality, but we're not going to have it if we have a Beis HaMikdash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Shafach HaMasa Ala Eitzim Al Avanim. Why do I have to destroy it? Because this is being used as a crutch. And as a result of that, you're living an irresponsible life. Therefore, writes of Shimshon Pinkus, yes, Mizmar LaAsaf. At the time of Churban Beis HaMikdash, they were rejoicing over the Churban Beis HaMikdash in a certain sense. It was a devastating loss, but on the other hand, it shocked them back into reality. It was like that painter who was on top of the cliff. One more step, he was going to fall off. And there was no option but to destroy the beautiful painting that he had created. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt the same way. The Jewish people are so distant and so far away from where they're supposed to be. And we have the opportunity to recalibrate ourselves, to reorient, to understand once again what the values of life are all about. Rav Pinkus takes it a little bit further and he writes, we live in a generation today where we have more Torah study than ever in the history of the Jewish people. There has never been a time like we are in today. We have yeshivas and schools and Beis Yaakovs and day schools, and we have shuls everywhere, in every community. We are all over the place. And he says, it used to be, person got up, went to shul, hispalalas atfila karoi, you took an hour to daven shacharis before you went out to work, because it was important to you. Mitchilase ad sofa, you said every word in the siddur. You came home at night, you had a few extra minutes. What did you do? You didn't turn on CNN. Or Fox, whichever one. They both lie. So you didn't do that and waste your whole night. What did you do? You sat down, you spent 5 minutes saying Tehillim. Asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make you successful in the next day. Asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give you nachas from your children. Asking the Ribono Shel Olam, I should have a parnasa, I should have good health. This is what Jews used to do. It's what a shul was about, it's what a Jewish community was built on. He writes, Zuhi Tzuras HaYehudi. Lu'um Azos, he says, he looks around today, and he's describing his experience. People wake up in the morning, I'll get up when I want. There's a minyan at my convenience. Whenever I'm ready, I'll show up. Whatever the minyan is up to, I'll join them. Even if I'm a half hour late, even if they're going to end in 10 minutes, doesn't matter. You know, I got things to do today. Often he says, we check our emails before we daven, we read the newspaper before we go to shul. Why? Because shul is not so important to us. We know the shul will be there. We know HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be there whenever we're ready to get there. We get to the tefillah, he says, you watch people running out early, cutting out parts of the davening. Everyone's in a rush, so we have to do a Hecha Kedusha, a Hecha Shmona Esser. We're going to cut out this part of davening, that part. We don't have time. And he says, in a certain way, people are using the shul as a crutch. People are using tefillah as a crutch. I'm a good Jew. I daven every day. What do you mean? I check in. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to all of us, that's not what the purpose of the shul was for. That's not what I had in mind. This is not the religion. The religion is not that we live irresponsible lives, running around doing everything else except giving attention to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's not what it is. Shafa chamasa ala etzim ve'ala avanim means HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes destroys that which is most precious to us in order to make us have a sense of what it really is about, of what it's supposed to be about. And this is really what I felt all those months when we were not in shul. It gave me an opportunity to think about what a shul really is supposed to be. It's not just a place where we check in at our convenience and come when it's good for us, don't show up when it's not good, have involvement when we want to, check out when we're not. Maybe I'll say Tillim today, maybe I won't. As long as I went to the minyan at some point, it's good enough. That's not what the shul is. That's not what a Jewish community is. There's a sense of ethics and morality. There's a value system that we are based on. There's an expectation that we are supposed to be living up to. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says you can't just live a whole day doing whatever you do and then show up and assume that it's all just going to be taken care of because you checked off the box and assumed that that's good enough. I did my godliness for the day. That's not how it works. It's not at all how it works. And that is exactly, that's precisely why HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to take away the Beis HaMikdash. That was not a punishment. That was the greatest gift he could have given the Jewish people. It was the opportunity for them to have a reawakening, to recalibrate themselves and to reorient what it is in life that are supposed to be the values that guide us, what it is that governs Jewish life, what it is that informs Jewish community. So as we experience the 3 weeks, and this Shabbos we will have the opportunity to celebrate Rosh Chodesh, but it is obviously a very sad time of the year. But it's an opportunity for us, as life should be a little bit slower in the summer, as we don't have weddings now and we don't have many of the experiences that we generally run around to. We do have an opportunity now to think a little bit more about some of the things that get neglected during the year. We have an opportunity to clear our heads a little bit and to take away some of that obstruction and to reorient ourselves from the overwhelming lives that we live and remind ourselves once again of what our values are, of what it is that we're looking forward to, what it is that we're praying for. Why is it that Yerushalayim, Beis HaMikdash, Eretz Yisrael are so important to us? What are we lacking by not having a Beis HaMikdash? How much is HaKadosh Baruch Hu a presence in our lives and how much is He missing? How much do we involve Him in all of the experiences of our lives and all that we do every day in the mundane experiences that we have as well? And how much is He just an afterthought that we check off a box and just assume because I checked in with Him that's good enough? So this is really an opportunity in our lifetime. It's an opportunity in our experience of the year to do just that. And it's my hope, as the Navi says, that these days of tragedy, that these days of mourning, yahavchu l'sason u'l'simcha u'l'ma'adim tovim, we hope that they will be overturned to be days of great joy and great celebration. Lanu ulechol Yisrael. I look forward to learning with everybody again next week.